Hey now, we are getting over, and I am the Silver King, Adam Silverstein, here to lead you through these hard times. Da-da. With your 2024 NXT Stand and Deliver Instant Analysis. That's right, Getting Over is back once again, and we are literally here just moments after NXT Stand and Deliver went off the air to break down every single thing that happened from the first of three WWE premium live events this weekend. Of course, it is WrestleMania 40. The Silver King has a lot of information to give you at the top of the show, tons of instant analysis to, let's say, Stand and Deliver in a moment, but I would be remiss if I did not kick off this show with a reminder that the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast
is all about Defy.
So please head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify, leave a 5-star rating on Apple, take a little extra time, especially this weekend, WrestleMania weekend, leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. It is also where you get to vote in our pre and post show polls surrounding all three WWE events this weekend. And your insight does factor into our breakdown at the end of these instant analysis episodes. Please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Over head. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You will get bonus audio, the fastest 5 minutes in professional wrestling, instant reaction shows to Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, along with exclusive news posts every Friday. All of that at buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Now, quickly, before we get into the NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis, I just want to give you guys a reminder of what our schedule looks like for the remainder of the week. On Saturday night, hours after you are listening to this show, if you're listening to it on Saturday, of course, we will have your WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 1 instant analysis. And then 24 hours later, Sunday night, we'll be back with your WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 2 instant analysis. And then this coming Tuesday, we will cover the Raw after WrestleMania, the WWE Hall of Fame, Bray Wyatt becoming immortal, the Slammy Awards, and much more. All of that coming up in the next few days. And if you happen to be listening to this before either night of WrestleMania, don't forget to go in our podcast feed, if you have not already, and listen to our WWE WrestleMania 40 Ultimate Preview. We also have a bonus WWE episode from this past week where we broke down the explosive interview that was held with CM Punk, another one with Cody Rhodes, and the A&E biography of Roman Reigns. We discuss Reigns' legacy leading into WrestleMania. Those are two WWE shows for you to listen to before the weekend is out, before WrestleMania is concluded. And we hope, if you have not already, you go back and listen to those shows. All right, folks, with that, let's move directly into the NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis before we go match by match. And we're going to go based on level of importance, not so much the card order. We do have a couple notes right off the top to give you. So this set that they used for Stand and Deliver, it was the same one that we saw Friday night on SmackDown and for the WWE Hall of Fame. It just felt unimpressive for a premium live event. But there was no way they could have switched it overnight given the early start time of the show. Presume it's going to stay the same for Raw given the massive amounts of ticket sales that WWE has gotten in Philadelphia. This was the singular most attended show in NXT history, and certainly the most packed visually since it had the NXT TakeOver designations. They announced it at 16,545. I don't know if that's obviously the exact right number, but it was definitely more than 14,000 into that 15,000 range. So they sold a shit ton of tickets for Stand and Deliver. The place was jam-packed, and it was great to see. Wade Barrett joined NXT commentary. It was great to see that he got a spot on WrestleMania weekend because he was left off the main team. He's not going to be calling WrestleMania. That will be Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Pat McAfee. And of course, shout out to friend of the show, Samantha Irvin, who will be the ring announcer for both nights of WrestleMania. She's doing it herself. And lastly, Metaphor was the host for Stand and Deliver. They did a cold open, straight like you'd see out of the Oscars, where they put themselves in other gimmicks like the Italian restaurant Chase U, the Ambulance, Dijak's Dungeon, and the Barbershop. They later got booed while all wearing Cowboys gear backstage. Oro Mensah was supposed to interview Obafemi before his match. He got a door right opened into him comedically. Noam Dar got put in a Kimura lock by Thea Hale. They tried to dress like women and go into the women's locker room. It was a whole deal. So those were just some extraneous items I wanted to mention off the top. But let's go ahead and get into your NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis. We're going to break down every single match on the card, what happened on the show, obviously thoughts and grades on the match, and then what it might mean going forward for NXT. And we're going to start where Stand and Deliver finished, the main event, Trick Williams versus Carmelo Hayes. Ava backstage during the kickoff show reiterated to the referee that there should be discretion in the match and there must be a winner. I also felt kind of dumb not previously putting two and two together that they're fighting in the city of brotherly love. Either that should have been played up more, or it went in one ear and out the other and completely over my head. So it's probably on me. So Melo got what I would call a basic entrance for him. He did have a Black Panther aesthetic. Trick had a new robe calling him the Anointed One. And other than a tracking shot, it was also pretty basic. The crowd and Booker T were insane. Vic Joseph stole my stat about this being the first time two black men main evented a WWE premium live event since The Rock and Booker T, basically a quarter century ago. Loud NXT chants at the bell. Disrespect from Melo to start. The match immediately went into the crowd with Melo taunting Trick's family, hence the discretion aspect. Hayes pulled off the turnbuckle bar pad with Trick kicked off the ropes and into the exposed steel. Lots of exchange strikes and emotion between sequences before Williams went on a stretch of big offense. Melo hit a springboard clothesline outside plus a frog splash and catch codebreaker. Trick accidentally splashed the referee in the corner with Melo taking out his knee. He grabbed a chair, but Trick wore him out with it instead. The referee either came to or it was a different one. I forgot, unfortunately, and stole the chair away with Hayes hitting a low blow false finish. Melo then tried to pop Trick with a knee, but accidentally took out a ref. He hit nothing but net for a false finish with another official right there to count. He stole the chair from Melo. The referee did. Trick then caught Melo with the trick shot running off the ropes for the 1-2-3. And the crowd obviously exploded for Trick. But for what I expected to be a monumental match, it never built to a crescendo. Between the referee spots and the chairs, and there only being like a singular real false finish before the 1-2-3, and that, by the way, came in pretty basic fashion, an exchange off the ropes, in which Melo had to slow down, by the way, because the timing was off. And then Trick just hits him with one knee. It felt like this match was in second gear most of the time, third gear for a moment, and then they started with the referees and the chairs and stuff, and it went back to second gear for the 1-2-3. Plus, it only went like 15 minutes. It was the third or maybe fourth longest match on the card. I don't know how you build this up as the biggest match in NXT history and deliver that. Like, from a quality standpoint, I don't know, it was the 50th best match in NXT history. Maybe not even that. All I can figure is either A, they didn't want to give us too much here, given they're probably going to team and feud back and forth for years like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Or B, perhaps it's just the start of a trilogy. That would make a lot of sense. But for two top-tier guys in a highly anticipated match, given the history and the fact that it's WrestleMania weekend, it was maybe the fourth best on the card, probably the fifth. I don't get that at all. And if it was going to be booked this way, then why are you under-delivering with your NXT championship match challenger? Only, and I'm going to say spoiler alert, they did one title change on the show. The crowd popped for Trick getting the win, but it was not like an explosion of emotion like we have seen so many times before. It was so damn anticlimactic when this was built up in a way that was supposed to be Trick exercising the demon of Melo and then moving on with his career. It's legitimately one of the most surprising bookings I can remember. And even if it was cut for time, which was possible, it looked like the referee at one point was speeding them up. I don't know why you would cut it for time. Stand and Deliver was well under 3 hours. I know that people need to get to the WrestleMania kickoff countdown show, whatever they want to call it. And then WrestleMania is basically 4 hours after it starts, actually 4 hours after this show was over. But to build an entire storyline for a year, and if this is the end and you're ending it that way, that's just massively disappointing. So look, this is the instant reaction. You know, you guys know that normally we go back, I'll watch matches a second time. I'll give a different thought if I have one. I'll provide a little bit greater detail on our next NXT show, which will come this Thursday. But that said, even in the moment, I just, don't really understand what they did here. And for me, it was massively disappointing. I was at 3.5 stars and a B. And I was thinking coming in, like, this should probably be an A-plus match. Just didn't come anywhere close to it. Let's move to the Women's Championship. Lyra Valkyria defending against Roxanne Perez. This was the third to last on the card. Fans were into Roxy as a heel with clear boos, though, at the beginning. She clipped one of Lyra's wings. You see what I did there. Early in the match, Valkyria hit two Northern Light suplexes before her arm gave out trying a third, but she eventually hit it, plus a running Liger Bomb. Perez hit a Tope Tornado DDT and Pop Rocks for a false finish. She rammed Valkyria's shoulder twice into the ring post. As she was further beating on her in the corner, Tatum Paxley jumped out of the crowd to distract. Instead, Roxy ran Lyra into Tatum, then into the post. Then she destroyed her arm against that post. Roxy put in the crossface. It got countered into a fall. Valkyria hit a roundhouse kick to the back of her head. Perez then dodged a high risk and locked it in again. Multiple fall counters, including one off of a Pop Rocks. Roxy countered Nightwing into a Poison Rana. Then she hit Pop Rocks and put Lyra back in the crossface. Roxy pushed off the ropes to keep the submission locked in, and Lyra eventually tapped out to a huge pop, despite the fact that Perez was a heel. Booker T gave a standing ovation, and then later backstage, Lyra snapped at Tatum. This was excellent, both the match and the finish. Lots of mat wrestling and manipulation from Roxy, and that did slow it down. It didn't make it as exciting as other matches on the card because she was working heel. And the crowd wanted to cheer for her. They wanted exciting moments from Roxy, but she wasn't giving them that. But from a technical standpoint, these two rocked. And the match story of Perez maturing and deliberately going after the shoulder, it fit with everything they did in the lead up to this show. Tatum showed up at the perfect time. The crowd didn't react to her at first. For me, that's probably because there were a lot of non-weekly watchers in attendance. Plus, Tatum had been off screen for most of the last month, and you can argue she probably should have come back before this past Tuesday. But it did give Lyra an excuse with a ready-made feud for TV, and she still did come off looking like a beast, taking all of that punishment from Roxy, only to submit when she really had no other choice. And let's not overlook that aspect. She actually tapped out. It makes such a difference when people are allowed to lose. AEW all the time in situations like this, the person passes out and therefore, oh, I didn't actually tap. I didn't actually get pinned. The main roster does this also. It's not exclusive to AEW. They do it less frequently, WWE main roster, than AEW. But nevertheless, it happens. In NXT, you know, it can happen occasionally as well. But more often than not, people tap. And Lyra tapping here, it sold the win as much more substantial for Roxy. And that was super important for her to get a signature solid win. Now that she's, of course, the NXT Women's Champion. Putting the strap back on her as a heel, it's exactly what we predicted, it's exactly what we expected, and it was exactly what Shawn Michaels needed to do. And like I said, on top of all of that, tapping her out, everything, she won clean. She did not cheat. She was just smart. 4 stars, A-. Now, before this match, Julia, the Joshi sensation, formerly of Stardom, she was shown in the crowd sitting with William Regal and Rossi Agawa, who previously ran Stardom, but is now starting his own promotion in Japan. The crowd popped loud for her, and it seemed like she did not expect that. She thought people wouldn't know who she is, but they popped massively. Now, she was not announced as a signee, and she also took a picture with Paul Levesque backstage. They shook hands. There was not a point. And I think in the caption of that, or a tweet that Triple H responded to, he said it was great to host her backstage. But it's been a poorly kept secret for months that she will join WWE sooner than later. First, she's helping Rossi start his new promotion over in Japan. Then she's going to come over after that. She's going to be NXT's biggest women's signing, at least since Saray in 2020. Obviously, that one did not work out. But really, Julia's at like another level. You could argue it's actually the biggest women's signing for NXT since Io Shirai in 2018. That's 6 years. And you know what? That's probably more accurate. She's not necessarily at Io's level, like when Io signed, but she's pretty freaking close. And I would say nearly as talented. Io, though, for me, has always been at a different level from a lot of other women. But this is huge, of course, for WWE. Getting her on TV, that's not going to happen unless everyone involved is confident that there's going to be a signing, or there's already been a signing, but they're just not announcing it. So huge moment there. And obviously having her in between another women's announcement that we'll talk about in a moment, and the NXT Women's Championship match, clearly they're presenting her as a big deal. All of that very important. Let's move to the NXT Championship. Ilya Dragunov defending against Tony D'Angelo. Tony D cut a promo during the kickoff show looking at the Rocky statue, talking about going through hell and coming out on the other side. He also got a Soprano-style intro for his entrance. Dragunov sold the hand from the opening bell, and D'Angelo worked it plenty during the match. Ilya hit a Death Valley driver ringside and a pull-down powerbomb inside. Stax handed Tony brass knuckles. He declined them. Ilya then stomped his hand on the ring apron, which was really cool. D'Angelo again declined help as Dragunov was beating him, basically a second time. So Ilya kissed him, which gave Tony a second wind. He was just pissed off. D'Angelo executed an avalanche overhead suplex, and then, I've never seen this before, they together decided to clear off the Spanish announce table, despite being opponents. Dragunov hit an H-bomb ringside, put D'Angelo on the table, hit a second one flying off the barricade, plus a flying senton inside for a false finish. Tony caught him flying for a powerbomb and hit a few slams. Dragunov came back with Torpedo Moscow and a super H-bomb for the 1-2-3 to retain the title. This was exactly what it should have been, better than expected as a match. D'Angelo, I think, did himself proud. He got a handshake from Dragunov after the bell, and he did level up his game for a match at this level. Ilya's mouth got busted open. That again made him look like a badass. Tony D twice refusing help. That was appropriate. It wasn't because he's a face. It's because he's all about the business. He wants to beat him man-to-man in the ring, and that's a nice character trait. I could see him now deciding otherwise, like he tried to win clean and didn't work, so now he's going to go after the North American Championship and maybe he cheats. That could possibly work. Dragunov needed to remain champion as D'Angelo was nowhere near ready for the top title, both from a positioning standpoint and a booking standpoint. We talked about it. He went into the singles division, decided to challenge for the title, despite not really having wins under him. And I didn't appreciate that from someone who's a weekly watcher of television. And yet they ended up putting on a pretty damn good match. It was always an odd booking though for the show, like I said, but given it did not main event, it was at least understandable that they did this. Trick almost certainly needs to be the one to beat Ilya and probably send him to the main roster when that happens. That should come before 2024 is out. It could happen around SummerSlam, but watching this show and seeing Dragunov just remain dominant and clearly the best wrestler, male or female, on the entire brand, then seeing the Trick and Mello match and saying, man, Trick, he's still really green, and we know that he's green. We've known that he's green, but he's still green. He's still a neophyte to some degree. Does it really make sense strapping him up? Like, I don't know that he's as ready for the title as Bron Breakker was when he won it, and Bron wasn't ready for it at all at that first time. So, you know, maybe this is a little bit longer. Maybe they're stretching it more than we expected. As far as this, going back to Dragunov and D'Angelo, the match story here worked with the hand injury, giving Tony D a better chance than he otherwise would have in this situation. And yet, he just was not up to the level. I went 3.75 stars, B+. By the way, this match went 17 minutes. The women's title match went 16 minutes. And like I said, the Trick Mello match went 15. So it was tied, Trick Mello, for third longest, basically, on the card, which, again, as your main event, doesn't necessarily make sense. Also, NXT for a while has been giving people like 20-plus minute matches, maybe even longer than that, and yet none of them went to that level on the show, which, again, was just interesting the way it was done. Let's go ahead and move to the North American Championship. Oba Femi defending against Dijak and Josh Briggs in a triple threat.
He don't want no water. He don't want no bread. All he wants is meat.
Folks, let me tell you.
There's a lot of beef out here.
There was indeed. Oba looked awesome during his entrance, like a total beast. He flipped both challengers completely over by their feet. Femi caught Dijak flying off the apron, ran him into Briggs, and then press slammed him on top of Briggs' ringside. Then he threw a desk chair, only for Briggs to choke toss Dijak off the top rope into Oba, who was sitting in the desk chair ringside.
Big meaty man slapping meat.
And that's what we got. The challengers double choke slammed Femi, only for him to double choke slam them, one arm each. Briggs took out Dijak with a clothesline from hell avalanche style for a rope break. They all exchanged a series of huge boots. Dijak hit High Justice for a one count, then came back with a massive Canadian destroyer for an arm lift. Dijak put Briggs in a fireman's carry. He went to climb on the ropes to do something maybe like a Samoan drop, only for Femi to get underneath him and tip them sideways for a doomsday avalanche Death Valley driver.
Reinforce the ring post. The beef's going to be flying tonight, gentlemen.
Dijak fully lifted Femi for Feast Your Eyes. Briggs tried to break it with a moonsault, but Dijak avoided it. Femi took it, and then Dijak hit him with a second Feast Your Eyes, only for the referee to get dragged outside. Briggs pounced Femi through the barricade and then ate Feast Your Eyes ringside. Dijak hit a fourth Feast Your Eyes second on him in the center of the ring, only for Oba to appear out of frame. The camera was fully zoomed in on the two guys' faces. Grab him in a choke, then powerbomb him into Briggs, covering Briggs for the 1-2-3. This was literally a perfect match until the finish. Just the straight up wrong decision to stick with Oba when he had an excuse to lose the title without getting pinned here. They should have taken that opportunity to crown Dijak. Not only did he deserve it, but you need a veteran holding the title, not a total neophyte like Femi. The camera shot was well done, but it was also blatantly obvious that that fall was not going to end the match because of how zoomed in it was. Let's get this out of the way. It gets a full 5 slabs of beef.
Big meaty man slapping meat. That's
what I want. Not a doubt. One of the best big man matches I can remember. Forget even the meat slapping aspect of it. The athleticism, the spots, the match story, all of it hit, the strength. Oba had probably 500 to 550 pounds of humanity on his shoulders. And he was walking around like it was nothing when they did the doomsday spot. That was completely insane. I'd have liked to have seen Dijak vary his repertoire a little bit. Hitting consecutive Feast Your Eyes on each guy, that was really repetitive. And he's so skilled, there's plenty else he could have done, plenty else he could have broken out in the match. Other than the decision on who won, that was really my only other nitpick in the match. Every person in that arena wanted Dijak to win, and I'm just not sure why the trigger wasn't pulled, given the situation. But wall-to-wall action, big hitters, Oba was made to look like an absolute star, Briggs broke out, Dijak remained at the absolute top of his game. This is a high grade. I'm going to have to watch it back to see if this is overrating it. But right now, I'm at 4.75 stars, A+, nowhere near 5, but just right on the border, slightly above an A match. The match of the weekend, the WWE match of the year at the time it was over. Obviously, we're taping this before we get to WrestleMania. We'll see what happens there. But let me tell you, folks, this was an absolute blast.
I need some meat.
I just need more meat coming out of it. That's the truth. And let's also shout out Knuckles for giving us this match and sponsoring it in the first place.
But I want you to know this. I prayed for this and it happened.
And now let's move to the tag team championship. The Wolf Dogs defending against Nathan Frazier and Axiom. This opened the card. The champions had a spliced together theme, which was pretty cool. The challengers attacked through the air with topes and springboards before the bell. Braun Breaker turned Axiom inside out with a super fast rope run clothesline. Axiom hit Breaker with a Spanish fly, then had a great sequence with Baron Corbin and included a botch, but they just kept working it. And they did so into the inverted DDT that it was supposed to be. It was really cool. Axiom took deep six and was set up for Breaker's spear, but he countered with Golden Ratio for a great false finish. Breaker took Axiom off the top rope with a Frankensteiner. It was supposed to be a Frankensteiner thrown into a catch powerbomb. The timing was just a little bit off, but it would have been sick. Braun ate a top rope Spanish fly from Axiom plus a springboard 450 from Frazier for another false finish. Breaker flipped Frazier 270 degrees off the top rope onto his chest. Then Corbin hit a splash, maybe for the first time in his entire career. That was a false finish. Frazier saved Axiom from a shoulder tackle into the steel steps. Corbin pushed both of them over the announce table. They sprung right back over top of it. And Frazier hit a Phoenix splash on Corbin for a broken fall. Corbin and Axiom then went end of days tornado DDT, end of days, like a double counter. Frazier escaped end of days after that. Only as soon as his feet landed on the canvas, he ate the spear from Braun Breaker for the 1-2-3 and the title retention by the Wolf Dogs. This was everything you could have possibly wanted from these four guys. It was very much a follow that mother effers type of match. It was the opener, and everything else on the card was going to be judged based on this. The Wolf Dogs retaining was the right decision, as we said on the Ultimate Preview. They are simply too hot, and Frazier and Axiom, they just really don't need the titles right now. I legitimately believe that Breaker and Corbin would work as a tag team on the main roster. And I wonder if there's any consideration to actually doing that. I would have them debut together as champions, win the SmackDown titles, then vacate the NXT ones. Not only do you have a super fun and engaging team on SmackDown, you have a ready-made feud for Breakker with the top guy when they drop the straps. And having him debut as a champion and then adding the actual WWE championships on top of it, you're strapping a rocket to that guy. And that's exactly what you want him to look like when he's getting into the ruckus, let's say, on SmackDown. Now, I said a couple months ago, and some people scoffed at this when I said it, but I actually believe the Wolfdogs might be the best tag team in WWE right now. Not just NXT, the entire company. They have every part of what you want a tag team to be. They have on-screen chemistry, in-ring chemistry. They're funny. They can be serious. They're dominant. And they work well with big competitors because of their size and small competitors because of their speed and athleticism. They really are the entire package. If everything in this match had been executed perfectly as planned, I'd probably be at the top side of an A, but I gotta go the underside of it because of the three or four imperfect moments. Still, 4.25 stars and an A, hell of an opener, second best match on the card. And this was like a takeover style match. I thought they did a fantastic job. Something else cool in this match, I mentioned that rope run sequence with Breakker. When he hit the ropes at one point, the entire ring visibly shifted. It was wild to see that, but it actually happened. Now let's move to Fallon Henley, Thea Hale, and Kalani Jordan against JC Jane, Kiana James, and Izzy Dame in a six-woman tag team match. The heels attacked before the bell. Kalani hit a sick pendulum tornado outside. Fallon had a really nice counter off the ropes into a suplex, only to eat a really nice avalanche Spanish fly from Kiana, plus a flapjack, 401k, and a perfect pump knee from the heels. Duke Hudson caught Thea as she was thrown outside the ring by Izzy. Kalani came back with a top rope moonsault outside, 100 times better than Charlotte Flair, and an immediate kip up when she landed, only for the injured Jasmine Nix to take her out. JC was left with no one to tag and Thea waiting for her. They got some shots in together. Hale then countered Dame off the ropes, cinching in the Kimura lock for the win. Again, a tap out. Fallon looked angry at something after the bell. Maybe she got hurt. I hope not. I don't think it was storyline. It was just kind of odd. Now, even though this was in the cooldown spot after the last two matches, which made sense, these ladies delivered. One of the awesome things about NXT is watching folks develop, not just year to year, but week to week and month to month. Seeing how much Kalani has improved from last fall, you forget she wasn't really doing much before she went into Iron Survivor Challenge. That was her first major match. For her to be in that match and deliver, and then come here in a far less, I'm not saying it's less scripted, but that was had to be so nailed down Iron Survivor where people were just kind of hitting their spots and going through their individual motions. Kalani here was wrestling. And to see her kind of do it in the way she did was super impressive. Thea's 20 years old. She's like a year or so into her career. And she's better than a lot of women out there who are 30 and have been doing this for a half decade or longer. I did think the heels would win. I thought JC would beat Thea. Then they would do a one-on-one blow-off with Hale coming out on top. So the result of the babyface winning, that was surprising to me. But everything here was super strong. I went 3.25 stars B. The future is bright for this division. This is just a small grouping of the talent coming up in the NXT women's roster. Now, after this match, Ava backstage announced a new title, the NXT Women's North American Championship, the first mid-card women's title in WWE history. And I just got three words for you on that. About fucking time. The crowd popped huge for it. It's great to hear the fans are down just from the announcement. This now does mark seven titles for NXT, if you include the Heritage Cup. And that's a lot for a two-hour show. Let's just be honest about it. But the women on NXT are featured to such a strong degree. I mean, it is almost equal to the men, if not completely equal to the men. I'd have to go and do math on it, and I don't want to do that because I'm not that type of person. But they are featured so heavily that having as many titles as the men just makes sense. There are women's tag teams. There are women's mid-carders, and there are women's main eventers. And it's really not the worst idea to have three titles as long as you vary the appearances on TV. Also, when you go and talk about seven, the Heritage Cup is a completely different style of match. It's not just another title. It's not even a title, actually. It's a trophy. But it's a different style of match with a totally different gimmick. So you should count it, but it's not the same as having seven just regular championships, is what I'm trying to point out. My only real qualm with this was the white stripe. The men's title's iconic because it has that maroon strap. I would have loved to have seen like a deep, dark pink or a pink purple, just something really dark like the maroon for the men, just to keep that concept going. But it was still an excellent move. I'm glad they're bringing in the title, and I'm extremely curious to see the way it gets decided. I mean, it's going to be a tournament of some kind, but I'm curious to see who's going to be involved and who ultimately wins. I don't really have a prediction right now. Maybe I will have one this coming Thursday. There was also a kickoff show match. Joe Gacy against Sean Spears. Ridge Holland was on the kickoff show team, which made it clear that his retirement was an angle, though we knew that anyway. As Gacy entered second for the match, Holland hit him from behind with a chair and then stormed off. There were dueling chants in the match. Gacy hit a discus forearm. Spears failed on a third C4 attempt, and Gacy hit a handspring lariat for the win. I assume Spears was going to win this match coming in, even more so after the chair attack. So it was a surprising decision that Gacy came through that and still beat this veteran. The match was fine bell to bell. It's always my opinion that a kickoff show match, it needs to have enough juice to get the crowd invested without overshadowing anything on the main card. This definitely achieved the latter. It did not overshadow anything on the main card, but it also didn't really have much juice to it. I'm at 3 stars, B minus for it. So lowest on the card, but you know, kind of appropriately lowest. Nothing really wrong with it to that degree. There was also a hype video for Javon Evans on the show. That's former indie sensation Jay Malachi, who has been signed to WWE for a number of months now. He's 19 years old, high flyer. He's already making waves on NXT Level Up. I think he just on the house show loop had a match with Carmelo Hayes, which was supposedly pretty good. He's making his debut this coming Tuesday on NXT, which of course is fantastic. Now that we have broken down NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis style, let's go ahead and wrap it all up with a final grade for the show. Just a reminder, when it comes to the pre-show expectation grades, the Silver King on the Ultimate Preview episode, I came through with an A-. My thought process was that some matches would probably overdeliver and the main event would be an absolute banger, which would take the show from somewhere in a B-plus range to over the threshold. I said a 90 A-, is pretty much what I was at. And interestingly enough, you all disagreed with me. Usually we're pretty aligned on our expectation grades going into shows and frequently on our exit grades coming out of shows. But you all gave a 30% A, 63% B, and 7% C from the poll we posted on Twitter at Getting Overcast. That averages out basically to an 87 in the 87-88 range, but nevertheless a B-plus for this show. So your expectations were lower than mine coming in to Stand and Deliver, but let's see what you all thought coming out of the show. Now, voting is still open as I read these numbers, so they might slightly change from whatever poll you see if you check our Twitter account in a little bit. But as of right now, we're sitting at 46% A, 52% B, and 2% C. And that averages out to an 89.9, which obviously rounds up to a 90 and an A minus. And I think you all came around clearly to what my expectation grade was for the show. It's also my final grade for the show. This lived up to my expectation. But what's interesting is it didn't live up to the expectation in the way I thought it would. The main event was not the match of the year. It was not this explosive moment for Trick Williams where we said, holy cow, they totally delivered and just made a bona fide star that no one's ever going to question and all this type of stuff. It really wasn't that. The reason why this show gets an A minus for me is because those two opening matches, the tag team championship and the North American championship, clearly the best on the show. And if you do remember in the Ultimate Preview, I said that had a chance to deliver just because of the meatiness of the entire match. I didn't know it was going to be that great, but it ended up being, as I said, clearly the best match on the show, the best match in WWE this year at the time of this recording. So those matches totally overdelivered. And then again, you know, Dragunov and D'Angelo, I wasn't totally that crazy for it, but they put on the best match those two possibly could have. And then, of course, Roxanne Perez and Lyra Valkyria did pretty much exactly what I thought it would, and the rest of the card transpired. So it was hot in the early portion. And, you know, the reason why it's not an A is actually Trick and Mello, because if that match was better to any significant degree, then this would have been a flat A card for me. But it just, unfortunately, you can't end on that note and then come back here and say, well, that was an A show, one of the best shows of the year, one of the best shows we've seen in years. It just, you can't say that because it wasn't. But huge credits in the North American Championship, you know, Obafemi, Dijak, Josh Briggs, huge credit to the Wolf Dogs, Braun Breaker, Baron Corbin, obviously also Nathan Frazier and Axiom. Those two matches stole the show. We had a great night from Roxanne Perez and Lyra Valkyria, booked exactly the way that needed to be. And in totality, Shawn Michaels, as far as I'm concerned, put on the best NXT premium live event since the rebrand. And I'm talking about the 2.0 rebrand, you know, a couple of years ago at this point, ever since they left Black and Gold. I do believe this is the best NXT premium live event since then, given that it was the most attended one ever, then obviously that's hugely successful for them. It should be for them as a brand, and maybe it can lead to a ratings increase and more attention on the product. That is always the hope when you're talking about the developmental product and trying to have it gain some momentum. You can do that by bringing main roster superstars down, but the way to get staying power is to put on really good matches and really good storylines that get people invested, and the crowd was invested on this card. Basically, every match over-delivered except the main event, which, as I said, absolutely under-delivered. But folks, we have a ton of professional wrestling still to come this WWE WrestleMania 40 weekend. So as much as I would love to pontificate on NXT further, we do need to wrap up this instant analysis. WrestleMania is just a couple hours away. The Silver King needs to do something, take a nap, get a drink. I don't know. Got to do something before WrestleMania. So on that note, I hope you all enjoyed this edition of the Getting Over Wrestling podcast, this NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis. On the way out, let me just remind you, we will have WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 1 instant analysis Saturday night, as soon as that show goes off the air. We will have WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 2 instant analysis Sunday night, as soon as that show goes off the air. Before either night, if you have yet to hear our WWE WrestleMania 40 Ultimate Preview, it is in the same podcast feed where you are listening to this episode. Be sure to listen to that. And if you have extra time, either now or at some point before Tuesday, because this is an evergreen show, you can listen to the bonus WWE episode where we talk CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, and Roman Reigns. So much still to come this week. So much to come next week as well. On the way out, allow me to remind you that the Getting Over Wrestling podcast
is all about Defy.
So please leave those five-star ratings for us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify on Apple. Take a little extra time, leave a five-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. Plus, it is where you can vote in those pre- and post-show polls that we just referenced. Please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up, you get bonus audio, the fastest 5 minutes in professional wrestling, instant reactions to Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, plus exclusive news posts on Friday. Again, that is buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Thank you all for listening to this NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis. We have two more WWE WrestleMania 40 instant analysis episodes before the weekend is out. This is the Silver King signing off and leaving you with just three final words. Bye for now.